Hello and welcome to the first annual NFF for Your Lists Only Best of 2020 episode. For this special two-part episode, we have split our Best of the Year list into two separate categories: action and action adjacent films for the first list, horror and horror adjacent films for the second list. And today we're going to be talking horror and horror adjacent films. My name is Matt Reifschneider, and I am joined by my overly eager beaver co-host and friend, Sean Kaler. How are you doing today, Sean?
I am super excited. Can't be more excited for the end of the year. For one, it almost even seems silly to do a horror list for a year that has been a horror movie.
It is. It literally has been. Number one on both of our lists is the year 2020.
That's pretty unbeatable.
My one complaint is there has been way too many false starts and endings to this. We have had way too many third act plot twists. It's all third act. It's all third act plot twists.
Oh my God, right? So true.
Ridiculous. Yes. All right. So as we go into this episode, just to let everyone know that as we work through this, we have each picked out five of our favorite films in the horror and horror adjacent genres, and then also three honorable mentions for the year. It's pretty simple, really. The three honorable mentions, though, may not be films we like. We may choose them to because they're disappointing or because we just want to talk about them a little bit and bring somebody's attention to it. So that's kind of how we approach this list for this. So hopefully we can get through this pretty quickly and not take up too much of your time, so you guys can get on to trying to watch these films for the end of the year for your own best of the year lists. So that's what we have. And just to keep going, I guess, because I'm just going to keep talking forever and ever, let's take care of some business, Sean. So if you like what you hear today, please check out our expanding back catalog wherever you listen to our podcasts on anchor.fm, Spotify, Apple, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, YouTube, you name it, we're on there. So definitely check us out. You can check out all of our series: No Franchise Fatigue, Good, Bad, Weird, Wild, Fatigued But Not Forgotten, and of course, For Your Lists Only, which is what we're doing today, for all of your weird cinematic analysis needs. And while you're there, please, guys, rate, review, subscribe, share it with your friends, you know, create your own lists. We want to see your best year-end lists. Tag us in it, because we want you and we want to share all of the love for genre cinema with you, and we hope that you do the same, because it is the time of giving.
That's true.
So that
and,
is...
like all of our lists, there's a fair chance that there's gonna be crossover, especially with the best movies. I know Matt and I definitely share one. He might have called it an action movie. We'll see. But I only mention that to say, you know, when we're saying it with our number, we definitely get to say our piece. Obviously, the other person can comment, but they will probably be saving the majority of their statements for their piece.
Yep. And we'll probably be talking a little bit of spoilers here, guys. So we'll try to keep it a little bit more spoiler-free than normal, and then, you know, certainly our franchise fatigue discussions or anything like that. But we definitely do want to chat a little bit about this. So we may lean into spoiler territory. So you can put in that siren from Kill Bill if you want, whatever, for spoilers. By Kill Bill, I also mean Five Fingers of Death. That's where he stole it from. So, you know, let's make sure that we have some spoiler warnings on here. So why don't we just start off with some honorable mentions? Why don't we go through, we each picked three, and I'm sure we very much have different ones on these. So go ahead. Why don't you throw me one of your honorable mentions, Sean?
So my first honorable mention for horror, I am actually going to go with one I didn't love, but I should have. And that would be Antebellum. I can't figure out specifically where this movie went wrong, because beat by beat, anything I told you about it, anything anyone told me about it, it really sounds good. The plot is good, the acting is actually very good, and it's a notable honorable mention for me, if for no other reason than it's actually worth seeing. It is definitely on that level. I just think somehow it fell a little short, maybe needed a little more style, You know me, maybe a little more violence. I'm not sure what it would have taken to push it over, but I'd still call it a movie definitely worth watching.
I agree. I actually was really disappointed with Antebellum, and disappointed is a strong word, but it is that kind of how I felt. Simply because I think I know where my disappointment stems from. And that's the part that when I saw the marketing, I thought, oh, this is an interesting idea where you have kind of this slave times that mixes in with modern times and you get to draw these parallels and things like that. And then when I watch the movie, they don't actually do that. It doesn't
Not
do
really,
that
no.
the way that I thought it would, or that, it like it stays in the slave times for almost 45 minutes, almost an hour before it starts to incorporate some of those modern elements, like the phone ringing and things like that. I think it's like the first one. And I was like, why are, in the whole time I was sitting there, I'm like, this is well done, well acted, well shot, things like that. And then the whole time I was thinking, I'm like, what happened to the modern stuff? And I think it would have been a more interesting film had they like bounced between the two more often, because then I feel like you would have had you could have drawn stronger parallels.
Then you can focus more on the mystery of how did they get sent back in time, less on like trying to, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I have really even an idea of what the fix would have been for me, but again, it's an honorable mention and I stand behind it. How about you? What is your first honorable mention?
So I'm going to jump in and I'm going to throw in, because it is the year where theaters have been closed and for a majority of people across the US due to the pandemic, there's been a lot of interesting films that have dropped on streaming platforms, exclusive to streaming platforms. And one of them I wanted to mention is a film from Welcome to the Blumhouse, which was four films that were released in October. Exclusively on Amazon Prime. And I wanted to mention Nocturne, which is the film about the two sisters who are going to music school and about how one of them finds a hidden book about this young girl who ended up committing, who ended up dying. She is said to commit suicide. And she starts to learn that in this book, it's almost like a supernatural, ritual that allows her to be the best at what she does. And as the film goes on, there's this really interesting parallels between music and like how her life and fate and all of this. And she's a classical pianist is the music that she plays. I actually thought this movie was way better than I thought it was going to be. I watched all four of these movies and a lot of them were just, they
I
may
was
have been
about to
interesting.
say, I watched the first set, which was The Lie and
Black Box?
Black Box, correct.
Yep.
And was so underwhelmed, I actually never got around to the second two. So I will take
Yeah.
that under advisement. So
And
Nocturne was pretty good
I
then.
actually really liked Nocturne. It was definitely one of my favorite horror movies of the year, partially because it was a surprise too. I watched Black Box first and I was completely underwhelmed by it. And I thought The Lie was interesting. Come to find out it's a remake, which I was a little bit perplexed by, and I
I'd be
wonder if the
fascinated to
original.
see the original though, yeah, because the lie is like 80% of a great movie. I think it completely stumbles over its own shoelaces at the end, but because I mean, if you've ever seen a movie before, you can kind of work out the ending, but
If you've ever
it's
seen a
almost
movie
there.
before, man, I saw Thumbelina. I bet I can figure this one out.
I mean, I bet you
I bet you could, because I
could.
totally did. I was just sitting there. I was like, oh, this is where it's gonna go. But yeah, I agree. The lie was an interesting concept, so I'm really and the title, the original title for the original one is, I think, We Are Monsters or something to that effect. And I'm sure people are gonna be screaming at us when they're listening to this, being like, no, this is the title. But I literally cannot pull it off the top of my head right now. And I remember thinking, oh, that's a really cool title. The
It's not even the
lie
movie we're
is a
talking about, but.
completely, utterly forgettable title. But nonetheless, Nocturne is, I actually thought, pretty good. The way that it starts bending reality and whatnot, there's a lot of style to everything. I actually think the performances are very good. It touches on some really interesting subject matter as it goes through it. It's definitely not, it doesn't quite hit that upper echelon for the year in terms of horror, but I definitely think it's worth checking out just because it is. I think it's a film that kind of got forgotten. And so, you know, a lot of people just probably scrolled right past it. So I highly suggest checking out Nocturne on Amazon Prime.
All right. And then my next honorable mention is... I can see people, please put down your fire and pitchforks. I'm going to explain myself here. But The New Mutants.
Oh, see, now my pitchfork is on fire.
So here's the deal with New Mutants. It had every reason to be one of the worst movies of the year, especially coming off of being the last movie in Fox's Marvel Universe. Because I refuse to call it 20th Century Studios. It will always be Fox to me. And, you know, is it a good X-Men movie? No. Is it a good superhero movie? Not in any conceivable way. And it's actually a piss-poor adaptation of the original material. But, as a watered-down PG-13 Dream Warriors, it's not so bad. It's carrying a lot on its back, and it has a lot of chips on its shoulder, and I'm not saying this is a flawless movie. Obviously, this is honorable mentions, but, like, given everything going on with this movie behind the scenes, the reshoots, the drama with Fox getting sold to Disney, and not to mention getting delayed into oblivion up until the point that it came out to no fanfare, it is... 1,000 times better than it should have been. And I will definitely fight that fight.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's an interesting film. And what's funny is I do have this on my action list, but it's definitely not towards the top. It might be at the bottom. It takes a swing for the fences. And then, you know, just when you think it's going to go someplace, then there's a shadow bear.
I'll even do you one worse. Just when it's about to start going somewhere, the credits freaking roll.
Yeah, right? Yeah, it feels like the first act of something. Like, it should have been, like, trimmed to a first act of something much bigger.
Oh, there was some version of this that was a pilot. I am just telling you.
Oh, yeah, it made you wonder. Show. It feels like that. Especially with, successful X-Men TV shows like Legion that were happening. It seems like this would be a prime example for that. Something like the CW could have really just run with. It makes you wonder if it was a backdoor pilot for something or whatever.
I really feel like it was, actually. I really do, deep in my soul. But like I said, I'm not even going to make like a hard push or a hard pitch. This is just a movie that was significantly better than it needed to be, probably better than it should have been. And if you're not looking for a comic book movie, you're not looking for the next Marvel movie, you're actually looking at it kind of as, baby's first horror movie.
Yeah.
This would be pretty good training wheels for something like a Dream Warriors, a Nightmare on Elm Street franchise, something like that. You know, I honestly think that.
Oh, yeah, that's fair. That's a fair assessment. So.
And then what would be your next...
So the next one I'm going to talk about, I want to talk about this because, again, this was a film that kind of came out. And that's one of the problems with streaming platforms, I believe, is that so many movies just kind of putter out. And there's not nearly the fanfare that's needed to sell these movies. And so a lot of these films get lost in the shuffle. You're like, here's this big movie. And then a week later, you kind of forget it exists, right? Oh, it's in my queue, but now it's 64 films deep, right? Because I've already added that many more. And that's why I want to talk about this film. This one came straight to Netflix. It's a film called The Platform. It's a Spanish film. This was a movie that I just kind of like randomly put on one night. I saw it was new. I think I was writing for Blood Brothers for another review for something. And I put it on in the background. And within seconds, I was sucked in. And I was completely sold on this weird Twilight Zone-esque mystery film about a gentleman who wakes up in the middle of some kind of a tower. where each floor is above the next one, and there's usually two people per floor. And what happens is there's a big hole in the center of it, and this platform gets dropped down from the top, and it's filled with food, all this food, and it drops down, I believe it's every day, right? And so what happens is that wherever you are in this tower is how much food you get. So obviously, if you're on floor one, you get all the food that you can eat, and things like that. But if you're on floor 50, there's just scraps left. There's nothing left. And so there's all this like social commentary embedded in this movie. And it gets crazy and wild as it goes, as this guy tries to figure out how to beat the system that is obviously randomly placed him in this. And, you know, every so often you will go to sleep and they'll change people on floors. So you may go to sleep one night and wake up and you're on floor number two. And then you may go to sleep and you wake up on floor 100. You know, so I just, it's a wild and crazy
here. You actually hear them even talk about people lower down, 200-300 floors down. And it's like at some point they have to start considering cannibalism and shit. Yep. Like,
yeah, and there's like this one, there's one lady who supposedly has a child that's lost in the system, and so she constantly is looking for the child. It's a strange movie. It's very high concept, but it is incredibly well done. The performances are fantastic, and it certainly goes to some wild and very Terry Gilliam-esque places with its material, and I cannot suggest this one enough. It didn't quite make my top five in terms of horror, and it's definitely more horror adjacent, but it's definitely a film worth watching.
Only thing I'll really say adding on to that point is protect the panna cotta.
Yes, but yes. Oh, right, man.
In that case.
All right. Your last
the
one.
The fact that my last one here, the fact that this is an honorable mention and not on the list should only speak to the strength of this list for me. Because 2020 was actually a good year for horror.
Yeah.
So with that in mind, call this an enthusiastic recommendation for Gretel and Hansel.
Nice.
This movie was really something. So you take a classic fairy tale, which in a lot of ways are the precursor to modern horror, and you make it a horror movie, and it really, really works. This is a very creepy movie with at least one ultra memorable effect. At one point, a witch kind of comes up out of a pool of like inky black ichor on the ground, and it is just a breathtaking effect. And, you know, this is a simple story, simply done, but lots of style, lots of polish, great lighting, well written, very well acted, and part of that kind of modern guard of PG-13 movies can be scary.
Yeah. The first note on this, a great use of the word ichor. you don't get to use that said very often. So, tip of the hat to you for inky black ichor. That is a good phrase. Second thing, I adore, the director of this film. I adore this film. When it came out, I saw it in theaters. I was a definitely playing the trumpet for this one, in terms of trying to get more people to see it. I know it was very controversial. It's a movie you either love it or you hate it. There's not a whole lot in between. But I'm a huge fan of this and the atmosphere it has. And it's weirdly super feminist slant on things with it. Enough to the point where, like, at one point, even though the witch is certainly evil, you're kind of like, ah, this witch is a badass. I'm totally game with this witch. Who's also played by the lady. She's a fantastic actress who played the Borg Queen in Star Trek First Contact. So she's always good. But she plays the witch in this. So I have to put out a special note. But yes, great choice. Gretel and Hansel is a fantastic little film.
Yeah. Alice Krieg.
Alice Krieg. That's her name. Thank you. Thank you.
Yes. And what is your last honorable mention before we start getting into numbers?
Yeah, so I wanted to throw out, I had a trouble with choosing between two of them, so I may just want to talk about a genre more than a movie, because I think 2020 was a very impressive year. And the reason I wanted to choose two is the one I want to talk about isn't necessarily available for people to watch. So I want to just briefly kind of touch on it and talk about something that's very similar. But this is the year where I feel like Indonesian horror has really made an impact this year, because there has been three incredible Indonesian horror films that all have come out this year. So Impetigore is the first one. That one is available exclusively on Shudder for the current time being by Joko Anwar. That movie has enough skinned bodies in it that it will make anybody creeped out. I highly suggest that one. The other one is a film called The Queen of Black Magic. It's a remake of an old Indonesian horror film. That one only came out in festivals at this point. It is supposed to hit Shudder sometime next year, so keep your eye out for it. The Queen of Black Magic is very creepy. If you do not like centipedes, do not watch that movie. But it has got some great scares to it. This weird idea of like a rural, you know, Indonesian black magic is involved in both of these films. But I have to throw about to both of these films, and Impetigore and Queen of Black Magic. Indonesian horror has definitely made its stamp this year, and I have to give my tip of the hat to both of those. If you like foreign horror movies, definitely check both of these out.
So I guess it's time for the real ones. Here's the numbers.
Yes. Top five, our personal favorites of horror and horror adjacent films. Top five of the year 2020. I mean, how can you top this year? It is a horrifying year. So let's do this.
All right. So for my number five, and this is one I definitely feel like is going to be in your list a little higher, and that would be Underwater. Underwater was a movie that, you know, I reviewed well. I liked a lot. I do have my problems with it, and weirdly it's the creatures, because I think everything else about the movie is so perfect for what it is. It's this, because even if you just look at it without the monster factor of this movie, they're in like the bottom of the ocean. It's so much pressure, so high pressure, that like if you go out without a pressure suit, or if there's even a hairline fracture in your pressure suit, it'll crush in like a tin can instantly, and it starts to fail. Like, that's already just as intense a setup as is even really possible, outside of basically the same story in space, gravity, if you will. Kristen Stewart is just really on her game in this, playing slightly against type. She's certainly not sleepy or bored at any point in this movie. And honestly, even though the creatures are my least favorite part of this movie, I will say, as just a general fan of Lovecraft, something about a creature from the depths of the sea, just this unknowable thing, is really, really dope. So you kind of throw all those elements together. This was certainly a good time in the theater. I'm not sure I breathed for 2 hours watching this freaking movie.
Yeah, it's so good. You'll be shocked to know it is not in my top five.
I am shocked to know that you were hotter on this movie than
I am. Still hot on this movie. It's just a very good year for horror movies. And actually, for listeners out there, I'm very nerdy, and so every horror movie or action movie or whatever that I watch during the year, I actually log it on Letterboxd, and I rank them. I actually have a running list of films that I've ranked for the horror movies. Do you take a wild guess where Underwater actually ended up falling?
Six or seven. I'm guessing it just missed your list.
18.
Holy crap. You do watch a lot more foreign stuff than I do.
Yes, I have a ton of foreign stuff on here, things like that. That being said, I watched a whopping, as of at this point, 64 horror movies that came out this year. So 18 is also in the top third, so that's pretty hot. So but yeah, no, I actually do adore this film. I think this film is incredible. I'm very hot on this film. I love the fact that this movie came out in January in theaters, has already been claimed as a forgotten classic. Because nobody saw it in theaters, nobody really saw it until it came out on home video, and everyone was like, "Why did we sleep on this?" Whereas, I definitely saw it in theaters and was like, got out of it, and I was like hooping and hollering. I'm like, "Hell yeah, we're starting off the year good. Even this movie's good." So, I do love this movie. I'm glad that it made your list because otherwise we wouldn't have had talked about it. So.
Yeah, at some point I wanted to make an honorable mention, not an honorable mention, but point out that I also haven't yet seen Freaky, but have understood that that would probably have made my list.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I haven't seen it yet either because it's very expensive right now to rent on VOD,
It is.
and I have a feeling that I really like the director, so I have a feeling I'm gonna buy it on Blu-ray. So I was just kind of hesitant to drop $20 on VOD if I'm gonna buy the Blu-ray when it comes out. So that's where I am at with that. Okay, so there we go. Underwater
Well,
for your number
how about
five.
you? What is your number five?
Number five, we're going to be starting off with an anthology film and one that recently came out, and I'm going to say The Mortuary Collection. Very big fan of this film. I adore films that have a odd sense of humor, along with a sense of fun to the horror that it mixes in. I'm not a huge fan of horror comedy necessarily, but The Mortuary Collection is not a comedy per se, but it is definitely a horror film. I love anthology movies also, and I'm sorry, Clancy Brown is a Crypt Keeper-like character who gets to tell these stories of people who died who sit in his mortuary is, oh, I'm all about it. I'm there. I was joking the other day that there's a good 40% of my personality that was unintentionally the Crypt Keeper, influenced by the Crypt Keeper in my life. And so any kind of film that gets to homage those kinds of horror films and stories, I am all about it. And the Mortuary Collection is the best of those kinds of the films for the year. So it's probably
Let
the.
me Crypt Keeper style axe you a follow up.
Oh, ha.
What is that's pretty good. That's actually pretty good, Crypt Keeper.
Yeah.
But
Happy horror
what
days, boys and girls.
what was your favorite segment?
Weirdly enough, I loved the babysitter segment that kind of capped it off. Big fan of that one. I was also a big fan of the opening segment with the lady in the bathroom with the mirror.
That's too funny because my favorite was right in between them, the guy with the catatonic wife.
With the wife, right? That one's the most heartfelt one. That one was like, it actually
That
dug
made,
in.
I mean, that laugh, cry, legitimate horror, that one was all over the place.
Yep. Oh yeah, I totally agree. I actually think there's not really a sleeper in the set of different stories.
No.
If any of them, it was the frat guy one, which while was probably the weakest of all of them in any other kind of anthology, it may have been the standout one. So I do feel like that's a little bit skewed when I talk about that. But that's why I highly suggest it if you get a chance to check out the Mortuary Collection. It is exclusive to Shudder, hashtag not sponsored. But yeah, you definitely can check it out there. So
Although we are deeply open to it because we are both huge fans of Shudder.
yes, we are. Yes, we are. Yes, please. Thank you very much. All right, number four. What is your number four, Sean?
So I'm almost bouncing back and forth on whether on how much I should say about this movie, just because I certainly don't want to spoil a thing for anybody that has not yet seen The Wretched, but do not sleep on this movie. I already have kind of a taste for culty and witchy type horror, and The Wretched is just a phenomenal film about a witch-like creature next door. Now, this is witch in the D&D sense of like it's a magical creature. This is like a bog hag, you know, next door eating children or whatever, but nobody believes the main kid. It's super classic setup, just done exceptionally well. Movie came out to no fanfare. I'm sure the tiny global pandemic had something to do with that.
It
But
weirdly did well in drive-ins, though. It was a
I saw
movie.
it in a drive-in.
It was a movie that was like in the top 10 for drive-ins for like 3 months straight.
Because it was like the only thing that came out for like 3 months
Yeah.
straight before
And
people were like, oh, maybe this drive-in thing might work.
oh, for sure. And like again, a nod and a tip of the hat to IFC Films who did put it in drive-ins. It is kind of the perfect drive-in film though, because it is a little
It
bit
really
funny,
is.
it's a little bit scary, it's very much Fright Night-y. So
Yeah. It's
I liked it.
also it is kind of interesting. That's a good point, because it's great in just the sense of like it's one of those things you only have to half pay attention to until the hooks really dig in, and then all of a sudden, good luck paying attention to anything else.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I feel kind of bad because this one didn't make my list at all for this year because I saw it last year at a film festival when I was at the Telluride Horror Film Festival here in Colorado. I got to see it there, and so I ended up making my 2019 list, not 2020. But I highly agree. This is a fun film to watch. The witch design is phenomenal, and I can't.
Super scary.
It's super good. So I'm not a huge witch fan for the most part, which we will get to here in a second, but I really liked The Wretched, so I do concur with you that it is definitely worthy of a number four slot. So
All right, and how about you? What is number four? Number gore, if you will.
number gore. a scary hissmas. No, number four is May the Devil Take You Too. Again, I am all in on Indonesian horror films right now, and the fanfare and love letter to Sam Raimi's Evil Dead films, that is the May the Devil Take You franchise, is incredible. The director Timo, who was part of the Mo Brothers, who's very much cut his teeth in horror, including the cult segment in VHS 2. Incredible stuff there. So.
Wait, why did I think the cult segment in VHS 2 was Gareth
He co-directed
Edwards?
it.
No joke.
Yep. So the
Because
Mo.
that is the best segment in that entire franchise,
Yes,
so.
and that was kind of like, and don't get me wrong, like the Mo Brothers did a lot of good horror to begin with, and they have now separated and kind of are doing different. Timo and Kimo are now doing their own films. In fact, Kimo directed the previously mentioned Queen of Black Magic this year. So, and then Timo directed May the Devil Take You Too. But I loved May the Devil Take You Too. I actually thought it was superior to the original. It just takes things the next step stranger and more batshit insane. Just even the setup for the movie is just kind of that weird tongue-in-cheek, over-the-top Evil Dead fanfare, and the style that just oozes out of this movie cannot be topped. And so for me, that's what it's all about. So.
Obviously, I can't speak to this one, but I mean, possibly just between you and me. Yeah, the only reason I haven't watched it is just I'm still trying to get through the original. But the intro to the original, where the dude is selling his soul for success or whatever, is so good.
It's.
Like, it is so well shot. Whole and that hospital scene. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'm still pretty early, but the hospital scene's fucking
It's
terrifying.
terrifying, and that's how these movies are. There are sequences in May the Devil Take You Too that are like just truly like, oh my God, there's in very Evil Dead fashion. In this one, people do get possessed by demons. And one of the friends gets possessed by a demon, and she is terrifying. There's a scene where she's chasing somebody, and they slam the door and they lock the door, and she's headbutting it, trying to get it open. Like, she's not banging on it with her fist, she's banging it with her face. And you're like, oh my God, this is so intense. So I cannot recommend this movie enough. And if you guys, like I said, if you get a chance, Indonesian horror films are like kind of where it's at right now, as far as I'm concerned. So I cannot wait to see what else they have up in their sleeve. So, but yeah,
all right,
there we go. Number four.
That takes us to our number three. So my number three is in fact a streaming exclusive as well. And I'm getting ready for Matt to try and hit me with his phone through the power of Skype.
Okay.
Because my number three,
the power of Skype compel you?
The immediate McG classic, Babysitter Killer Queen.
Oh my God, you're killing me.
It's so good. Oh, I just want to wrap myself in a warm blanket.
I was going to say, for the audience out there, he's rolling around with his arms wrapped around himself. It's very awkward. I don't know what's going on.
If you didn't see The Babysitter 2 years ago or so, McG dropped, bar none, the best 80s horror movie made since the 80s, probably. And with the Killer Queen, it just cranks everything up to 11. This is definitely a horror comedy. Definitely not Matt's style. He does not like McG.
I do. I don't, but we'll get into that in a second.
But the gags in this movie really work. The characters, which were so strong in the original Babysitter, are still strong for the same reason. They're very well characterized. The jokes are pretty well written, and this is a bloodbath. Like, this movie is so violent and so gory, but it's cartoonishly so. I wouldn't say in the Evil Dead sense, but in the early 90s, late 80s, like I'm saying, kind of horror sense of just gallons of blood. I'd say this is more in line with like a Night of the Demons, you know?
Right.
So if you were as nostalgic for that type of horror as I am, you really can't do much better. This movie was just a blast. Plus, it's just another crown jewel in Samara Weaving's crown of being the current genre queen.
She is the genre queen, and mad respect for her to all of this. This film withstanding. I weirdly enough think that the first Babysitter film is McG's best film. I would argue that. I actually think that movie's weirdly well written. I think that it's movies that a lot of fun. I actually rewatched it in prep for the second one, knowing that it was coming out straight to Netflix. Hashtag not sponsored. But I sat down and watched the original one, and I was like, God, this is actually really, really effective at what it does, and it does it really well. And the stunts are really good, and then the gore is really good and stuff. When I watched the second one,
kind of plays on that fun Satanic Panic thing.
Oh, for sure, for sure. When I watched the second one,
in terms of the actual Satanic Panic, not in terms of the movie, although
yes,
it's also really
good. Yes, it's also of that same ilk of this style.
Very same ilk.
So,
yes.
Satanic Panic, but this second one was too over the top for me. I just didn't. It lost me at some point because it was so over the top. And it was funny because they introduce a lot of new characters, and I think the new characters are super weak compared to the original characters. Enough so that when the old characters came back, I was like, oh, thank God. Like, was like, oh, these new characters blow. Like, I don't want to. And I feel like that was a weird crutch for the film. But I get why you like this movie, because this movie just is so style. There's so much style to it. It's over the top style. It's very cartoonish at times. There is actually a scene where it is shot like a fighting video game, which again was one of those moments where it kind of lost me. It kept reminding me of the Freddy Krueger in the video game where he's playing with power,
I'm playing with power,
which is not a good comparison for me to make. That's like one of my least favorite moments from that. But, I am glad somebody liked it. So,
no. Actually, I mean, we're kind of joking, and well, I know you're not, but I mean, playfulness aside, this speaks very, very deeply to my taste for style over substance, which frequent listeners of the podcast are aware of. I do love my McG's. I do love my, Baz Luhrmann's. I just really into hyper stylish stuff, and this is very, very much so. Honestly, if you told me it was a pulp comic book, or even better, something a comic book parodying old pulp comic books, I would totally believe you. Yeah. I know this is an original screenplay, but I'm just saying, if you told me that was the origin, I'd be like, yep.
That's what tracks. The style feels like. Nope, that totally tracks. So, was not a fan of the sequel, but I'm glad that you are. So, and high enough to put it at number 3. You want to, just out of curiosity, take a wild guess on the 64 films that I watched, where it fell on my list?
It's certainly not the worst of the year, so I'm going to go ahead and say
57 is where it fell. So yep, it beat out You Should Have Left. It beat out The Turning.
Should Have Left. The Kevin Bacon one.
Yep. It beat out that one. That one was a bad one. It beat out Brahms, The Boy 2. So, it's got that going for it. So, which is actually number 64 out of 64 is Brahms, The Boy 2. So that was.
Really? Are you sure it's not The Grudge?
It is. See, now you get your Babysitter Killer Queen. I get my Grudge. So that's where we're at with this. I get my Grudge. I will defend that movie till the end of days. I just had to bring Grudge, didn't you? I actually had somebody I saw the other day. Somebody requested we do the Grudge films. So just a forewarning.
I'm open to it. Plus, we need to before we get we're about to do the last Ring films we can do without doing the Grudge series first.
Yep. So we're going to start tiptoeing our way into that one. So, all right, there we go. That was your number 3, Babysitter Killer Queen. So why don't we jump into my number 3? Number 3 for me.
Absolutely.
Is going, weirdly enough, another streaming exclusive, because that is how this year goes. This one is on Netflix. It is, yeah. This is a British film called His House, which it is a haunted house film, which I know you're not a huge fan of, but what is fascinating about this movie is that the big problem with haunted house films is that we really, really like to talk about middle-class white people when it comes to haunted house films. And unfortunately, that tends to get really, really run dry very quickly in terms of the system. So His House is refreshing simply because of the angle that it takes, because our two our married couple that moves into said haunted house are refugees from a war-torn Sudan. And they just get into the program as refugees, and they're brought to London, and they are put into this house. And if you know anything about how the refugee systems work, they can't leave. They can't leave the house. That's not an option for them.
So you are actually guessing correctly in the sense that I did not like this movie as much as you did, and it is largely, again, just personal taste. I'm just not into haunted house movies, but even just off of what you just said already touches on the best thing I can say about it, which is it is bar none the best setup a haunted house movie has ever had. The fact that they literally can't leave, because basically it's face the house or go back to Sudan.
Right, right. And even then it's like they can't even tell anybody about it because who's going to believe them? Mm-hmm. You know, who's going to, there's such a good
setup.
They're
going to call him crazy.
Right. And there's so much playing against this couple and the performances are so strong in it. The visuals are really good. And the fact that these parallels about the ghosts that are in this house, it may not be the house that's haunted, right? It's this idea of this, the trauma and the tragedy that has fallen, that has followed them from their life previous, you know, it doesn't leave. So there's this great subtext to this movie that I just really enjoy. And if you don't buy into the haunted house film, yeah, a lot of the scares may come as a little bit more cookie cutter or by the formula, but for me, just the setup and the heart and characterizations and depth of the story itself of these characters really hit home for me. And so I have to give this one my number three slot. So,
and again, you know, all my problems with it were style and plot. Characters not only well acted, very likable.
Oh, yeah.
The couple in this. Like, very, very likable. You want them to. You want them to do well.
Yeah.
And that, I will say, it was certainly compelling. It was a compelling movie.
Yeah. I just thought that, you know, for a movie that could have easily been very, you know, paint by numbers, His House, I felt, was really, really refreshingly thoughtful in how it went about hitting the genre. So for me, I got to give it my number three. So that is His House at number three. How about number two for you, Sean? We are down to the top two.
So, I don't want to freak anybody out or step on anyone's toes, but who am I? Who are you? Who is anything? What is anything? Yes, I am, of course, talking about Brandon Cronenberg's powerhouse freshman film, Possessor. Oh my God, this movie. It's hard to even know how to talk about this movie because it is such a force of nature. And, you know, I'll go ahead and go out of my way to fill my time because I know you've definitely got plenty to say and you probably numbered it yourself. But, for me, this is pretty much everything I ever want in a movie. I don't even care about the genre. There's philosophical questions and deep ones, like, what are we? What is the stuff that we are? There is violence and gore to a level I was shocked. I was clutching pearls at a few things in this movie. And just the visuals generally, because it has a very high concept plot that would be very, very difficult to explain in a traditional way. But this movie also does not rely on exposition in any significant way. It manages all of its work through visual storytelling. And to visually get across some of the concepts it is getting across, and I am playing a little vague, but to visually get across some of the concepts it's getting across is unbelievable. Not to mention just the nature of the story means that all of the acting from top to bottom, famous actors like Sean Bean all the way to, I'm not personally familiar with the lady who played the main character, but...
she played Mandy.
No shit.
Yeah.
The Nick Cage movie. Wow.
Yeah, I know you liked Mandy.
She did, didn't she? Like, yeah. I did like her. Mandy.
Yeah.
But, like, everybody is bringing their best, and they have to bring their best in a few different ways from a few different angles. And I could not possibly heap enough praise on it. I almost wish I didn't have to be as vague as I do, but kind of like The Wretched, this is a movie you really need to just experience and see. I think the only kind of lasting notes I'm going to leave on it before, the last notes I'll leave it on is, for one, Brandon Cronenberg is coming out faster than his dad ever did. I love David Cronenberg. Hell, we did a whole month on how much we love David Cronenberg. But, you know, as much as I like Rabid, if he had come out the gate with, you know, the 1-2 of Antiviral and then Possessor, like his son did, I don't know if we would ever talk about another director. Certainly not on this show.
For sure, for sure. It's Possessor is fascinating because, as you mentioned, Brandon Cronenberg is really working on the backs the what his father was doing, so much so. And I hate to be like, oh, Brandon Cronenberg is just David Cronenberg Jr., right? I don't want to be that way because Brandon Cronenberg very much has taken what his dad was doing in the 1980s and has made it for a modern audience in a way that his dad, I don't know if ever could have done. Which I think is dibs to him in those regards. But what I find, you know, and I'll just make this one point because you've covered this brilliantly, but I'll make this one point here is that what I find so fascinating is the balance that Brandon Cronenberg brings to Possessor of the difference between subtlety and like visceralness. Because I've never seen a movie that is more like in your face and combative and abrasive and yet subtle and getting under your skin.
You know, that is actually, I love the way you put that, because that's incredibly right. That's exactly right. Because it's so easy to describe this movie as so gory and violent and sexual and boy, especially if you get the uncut version, you're going to see stuff you've never seen before.
Yes.
But although that is all true, it's slightly disingenuous because that's not how the film presents it. It presents it very philosophically and very it's so focused on what it has to say, and you just have to respect a laser focus like that.
Yeah, it's showing you some extremely violent substance, but you're not sitting there being like, oh my God, look how violent that is. It's asking you to be like, why is this here? What does this mean? Right? You're actively like doing a call and response to the film in regards to its violence and sexuality and things like that, asking, what does this mean? Versus just reacting to what's on screen. And I think that is the key point of why Possessor is so good. So that's the only point I'll talk about at this point. So.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, this could very easily be Possessor cast. I could definitely talk this movie up forever, but I think that's where I'm going to leave it as far as a choice in a listicle goes. Nonetheless, even though this is not my number one, understand that this has the highest stamp of approval. Like, if I was the one reviewing this for the site, it would have gotten a hard five, period.
Right.
It
Yep.
may be the only perfect score I'd ever give.
Yeah. Incredible filmmaking as it is. So, all right. My number two is I'm going to probably venture to guess we'll talk about it again in a second. But my number two is going to be one of the coolest reboots that I have seen and modernizations that I have seen, period, in the last 20 years. And that is Lee Whannell's The Invisible Man. And we have discussed this ad nauseam, between you and I. We have a review up on the website over at Blood Brothers. You can definitely check that out. So I won't chat a little bit. I won't talk too much about this movie, because this movie is a well-regarded film in terms of horror for the year and even reaching beyond the normal horror fans. It has received a lot of praise for its choices, but I just wanted to briefly talk about that. I do believe this is the perfect film where less is more. And I don't know if Lee Whannell could have done it any better. His ability as a director and a writer to take a camera and just point it down a hallway and cause you to be afraid for this woman's well-being is unmatched this year. And so simply for that, I have to give The Invisible Man my number 2 slot.
Rock on. And what's funny is I'm going to go ahead and use that to dovetail into my number 1 because you did nail it on the head.
Figured it would be.
Yeah, Matt has heard me. We've discussed it while recording. We've discussed it while not recording. Matt has definitely heard me go off on this movie. Anybody that knows me sufficiently well could probably guess this was going to be my movie of the year. And I don't mean horror movie. I mean, this is the best movie of 2020 to me. Don't want to put too fine a point on it, but I love kind of the domestic abuse narrative and how the film challenges you. It looks you in the face and dares you not to believe her, because all you have the whole movie is her word. You don't ever actually see him hit her. You only see him be particularly aggressive once in the beginning, where he punches through a car window, but which, by the way, is not okay behavior, and, you know, you couldn't call him anything but an abuser, but it does not change the fact that we never see him physically assault her. We never see him say a cross word to her. All you have is her word and knowing what movie you walked into. And the film just dares you to second guess her. And I really kind of appreciate the balls of that. Lee Whannell, I really think, whether or not he was trying to, has achieved, if not a feminist masterpiece, at least a domestic abuse masterpiece. And I don't mean that, you know, to sound even slightly jokey at all when I say that. I mean, like,
yeah,
actually, domestic abuse horror is a thing, and this is the finest example of it. Boy, didn't think you'd be saying that about a Universal Monster reboot, though, yeah, right?
Especially after The Mummy came out. We were all like, ooh, Invisible Man, ooh. But, I mean, we did a whole episode on Lee Whannell, so if, you know, listeners out there are more interested in hearing about what we have to say about The Invisible Man, please check out that episode on Lee Whannell. We definitely go into it. It's more about him as a writer, so we do talk a little bit more about the writing of The Invisible Man than the direction. But we do get into it a little bit, and so we do talk quite a bit about it at that point. So I definitely suggest that.
But, yep, again, don't want to put too fine a point on it, but it is my number one for a reason. It is, as a matter of fact, really the only reason I don't get into the type of hyperbole where I'd say that this is the best horror movie of the millennium is, frankly, because Hereditary exists.
Yeah. Yes, for sure. Which is funny because I do but like
it's on that tier for me.
Right. It's that super high upper echelon kind of horror film. So, all right, there you go. Number one, Sean, The Invisible Man. And which is funny because that just dovetails with my number one, which happened to be your number two. And that is Brandon Cronenberg's Possessor. That's funny that we ended up with two of the same in our top five. So I'm glad we get to talk about this. And you stated everything very finely with Possessor. I do have a review up on bloodbrothersfilms.com. So definitely go check out my review for Possessor if you want to hear more about it. What you said was great and completely true about everything. This one is my number one of the year simply because, as we have talked about in the David Cronenberg episode, David Cronenberg is one of my favorite directors of all time. I adore films that can take the physical and the spiritual and the emotional and somehow get them all to work together, even when it's grotesque. And I think that this film is Brandon Cronenberg making a statement with it. Don't get me wrong, Antiviral is fantastic. His first film, he literally came out of the gate at full speed. And it's fascinating to see that with his sophomore effort, he's still able to find that incredible balance between everything. And as you said, it reads, if you read the plot synopsis of it, it almost sounds like a bad sci-fi action movie. And then the fact that it's not at all any of that, it's definitely horrifying, is only the best way to describe this movie. As you said, the performances, where it goes, I do not understand how they could cut this movie. I was we had movie theaters open up for a very short time here where I live. I was able to see Possessor in theaters. I was alone in the theater when I saw it, which is almost even a worse thing because I literally went through like the seven stages of grief and existential dread while watching this movie all at once, because this movie hit all everything for me. This was a movie that when I got out of the theaters, I literally was like, this is the best film of the year for me. I don't know what can beat it. And again, man, Cronenberg is really taking off where his, I mean, David Cronenberg is still doing very good movies and he's doing very good stuff right now. He's acting in Star Trek now. So,
I read he's developing a sequel to Eastern Promises right now.
I don't know if he's attached to that though.
Oh, are they just broadly developing?
They're just broadly developing it. I think, I don't think either him or Viggo Mortensen are attached.
Well, that just got way less interesting.
Oh yeah. It's super. Yeah. I was a little bit perplexed when they announced that. But nonetheless, Possessor is my number one. I do highly suggest it. But please, if you have a weak stomach or a weak sense of willpower, this movie will fuck you up. And so...
weak constitution.
Yep.
Or even in a slightly off mental state in any conceivable... Really, go in...
Yep.
As even as possible.
You gotta be fucking rock solid for this movie. This movie will tear you apart. And it's probably the reason I love it so much. I love movies that challenge me in that way. So I do have to give Possessor my number one spot. That's all she wrote, folks.
All right,
Murder, she wrote.
And that is the No Franchise Fatigue Best Horror and Horror Adjacent of 2020.
All right. But
do you guys agree? Do you guys disagree? Please, please, if you've never accepted one of our calls to action before, please let us know your top five. I'm always looking for something new to watch.
Absolutely. What did we miss? You know, even honorable mentions. What are movies? Maybe they're not great, but there's something that's interesting about them. As I said, I watch a lot of horror movies, you know, during the year. I watch a lot of movies every year, you know, thanks to Blood Brothers and these film festivals I get to go to that I'm, you know, grateful that I get to see and whatnot. I get to see a lot of stuff, but there's a ton of stuff we miss. Did we miss Freaky? You know, is that something we should prioritize? Did we, you know, is there other films that maybe we missed out?
I'm halfway through Smiley Face Killers right now. Like, should I have gotten all the way through that first?
Yeah. Oh, my list is still, I probably have another 15 horror films on my list to watch that I just haven't gotten around to yet. So please let us know, what are your top five films? What are your honorable mentions? Let us know over at the social medias. You can hit us up at facebook.com/nofranchisefatigue. You can hit us up at Twitter over at the handle NFFpod. Definitely check us out there. We'll have follow us. Let us know what you guys think about our lists. Are we idiots for our lists? Are you going to be like, I can't believe you loved the Mortuary Collection. Anthology films suck ass. That's fair. That's a fair assessment. But I'm going to put that at number five nonetheless. But there we go.
You know, I honestly feel like if you try and write something that bad about anthology films, you're going to end up on one of our Bad Santa's lists.
You're going to end up on a Bad Santa list. Naughty, naughty, naughty. That's where you're going to end up. So where can people get a hold of you? What email can they send to you?
They can always reach me at nffpod.sean@gmail.com. My name is, as always, a four-letter word.
Yep.
And
they can reach me over at Twitter at the Movie Matt. You can reach me there. And you can also get me at the email at nffpod.inkyblackicker@gmail.com. Inky Black Icker. Try saying that 10 times fast. Gross.
It even just feels gross to say.
It does. Like, why would you? That's going to be stuck in my head forever. That's how I'm going to describe everything. Inky Black Icker. So, all right. So you guys can reach us there, but let us know what you guys think. Stay tuned. Next week, we will be doing our Next list are top fives and honorable mentions for action and action adjacent films. So definitely check us out next week when we drop, we're dropping some bullets and swear words and all kinds of fun stuff and explosions.
We'll definitely have bullets, swear words, and explosions.
And explosions. That's what we aim for here. So, all right. Thank you so much, guys. We will see you next week.